You're listening to a podcast from 702.
I don't know whether you've seen, I think it's called Leaving Neverland, the documentary about alleged abuse, and I use the word alleged uncomfortably because, quite frankly, I think it's compelling, despite what the superfans of Michael Jackson are saying. And you can't unsee it. Rebecca Davis, you sent me the link, and you were right. I watched it at my peril, and even though I'm not squeamish, I can watch that kind of stuff. I wasn't sure why you were warning me. And after I'd seen part one, I still have to see part two. I slept very poorly. I have changed my view of Michael Jackson permanently. I quite frankly think that he wasn't weird or only weird. He was a sexual predator. And I cannot play his music ever again. And I think we should cancel him. And the ethical question we're going to raise this half an hour with critical thinking lecturer from UCT, Jacques Rousseau, is to ask the question, when evidence emerges of some kind of moral wrong or harm that had been committed or perpetrated by someone, should we cancel them? And of course, when we say cancel, we don't mean anything fancy by that. Stop consuming their work. We could ask the same question of R. Kelly. We could ask the question in the South African context of Mum Pincher. I want your view. But Jacques is paid to think very carefully about these ethical issues. So before you call in, listen to this dialogue at least for 5-10 minutes, and then I'll give you an opportunity to engage as the conversation unfolds. Jacques, thanks so much for coming to the studio. It's wonderful not having you on the phone, but having you in the studio.
Yeah, it's lovely to be here. Thanks, Eusebius.
It's both a fascinating and a difficult issue, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's also, of course, not a new issue. These people we're talking about today are global superstars. They have shaped culture in various ways. But we've always had cases like this. I mean, think about Woody Allen or Roman Polanski or whatever. So we shouldn't just isolate it to these particular cases just because they're noteworthy, in a sense. But it's a fascinating issue because the artistic genius in the work can be assessed to stand alone. So the influence that Michael Jackson has had on popular music, and of course he's not Prince, but after Prince, he's perhaps the most influential artist of the last century. And his traces and his impact is immeasurable. So you can't eliminate that from history. Yes. But at the same time, of course, there's a deep discomfort in listening to it today.
What is interesting about the idea of cancel culture, I think is the term I saw in your tweet, is that there's an impulse that those of us who think that a particular artist or a particular figure in history or in contemporary life, when we think that they've done something wrong, we feel an ethical duty to not be indifferent to what we have discovered. And I suppose, and work with me, I'm thinking aloud, I think we're trying to figure out what are helpful and maybe even ethically compulsory ways to express our disgust and moral disapproval, right?
Yeah. But I mean, I think we should be wary of the fact that it can be this weird performative thing, right? So you're just trying to signal to your friends that you don't condone the behavior. Because if we were to do this consistently, go back in history, think about things like Hugo Boss designing Nazi uniforms. We don't boycott Hugo Boss for this reason. You can think about IBM or there's many multinational corporations where you can find some deep historical stain. So there's an opportunism, there could be an opportunism around picking particular examples and not others.
But can I ask us to separate two questions? And I'm not saying the first is not important. I think it is incredibly important, especially because many people listening to us will want to know, what should I do or not do? There is a question around consistency. And the second issue is the more immediate question. Would you agree with me, and I'm not even sure whether this is my considered view, that some of us sincerely intend to signal not virtue, but we sincerely feel that from an ethical point of view, we ought to demonstrate approval.
Disapproval, yeah. I don't think so. I don't think you ought to, no.
Okay, because that's interesting.
So I'm a utilitarian, as I'm sure you know, but the listeners might not know. So I think one should do, the right thing to do is the thing that conduces to the maximum good. And I don't think I can do anything for the victims of Michael Jackson. I mean, assuming the allegations are true, I don't think I can do anything for future victims by not listening to Michael Jackson. It makes zero ethical difference to the world. All it does is, in my circles, I can indicate to people that I'm repulsed by not listening to it. And I mean, I can also just tell them I'm repulsed, but say it's still cool music. So I can understand some people not having the same response and being viscerally opposed to it and not listening. I don't see the ethical argument for not listening. I see the emotional argument for not listening.
Okay, that's kind of interesting. If you have strong views about R. Kelly, Mum Pincher, Woody Allen, or Michael Jackson, do you feel a compulsion to mute them? Or do you struggle with that? 011-883-0702. Give us a call. 011-883-0702. I suppose one utilitarian bit of reasoning that some people have is that they will say, if I continue buying the horrible Mum Pincher's music or R. Kelly's music, then I am helping to keep alive the social and the economic power that partly enables this monster to get away with so much, because he or she or they were not just harmful towards their victims and survivors vis-a-vis nasty characteristics in their person, but precisely because they were larger than life. And that is an important part of the story of how a Michael Jackson can get away with saying to an Australian mom, can I borrow your child for a year? And so if you continue listening, one utilitarian problem, potentially, I mean, the guy's dead now, so it's a bit literally quite moot/mute, is that you can inadvertently sustain the very power that enables some of these figures to get away with this stuff.
That is an issue that's given me pause with my own argument. On the simplest level, income, royalties and things. So as you say, Michael Jackson is dead, but you're still supporting an estate, and the estate is fighting a PR war to silence the Leaving Neverland, and they're putting concert videos up and so forth. They're trying to kind of whitewash the Michael Jackson legacy. So you could be facilitating that. I wonder whether my individual contribution or any of our individual contributions is enough to consider that a compelling argument against listening. I'm not sure. I mean, I see your point. I think that the juggernaut will keep going, whether or not people take a virtuous stand, because many people aren't even going to hear about these things, about these allegations. They're just going to keep listening to the music.
But what makes me uncomfortable is that if you watch this, Doki, I've no doubt that you're going to agree with me that despite what the super fans are saying, I just think it's compelling.
Didn't we always know it, though?
We did.
Yeah.
We always did. But when you watch this, like, it becomes indubitable, as far as I'm concerned. And I wonder, you call it emotional, but for me, our emotional connection to art and to artists is also an interesting part of our ethical ways of being. I wonder whether you would still, despite being a utilitarian, whether you would be ethically indifferent to listening to that music privately, even if your private consumption may not contribute towards the state, et cetera, because you already bought the record and you're just listening to in your room. I think you ought to feel emotionally ill at ease listening to it, I think.
See, I can really sympathize with that impulse, but I wonder whether we've become... And my problem, as we've often discussed, I think, is that perhaps I'm too abstract and objectified about these things. You're alluding to the fact that I'm making too casual or glib a separation between two things. Mm-hmm. But I do worry that we have conflated or collapsed two very distinct categories here. So that the matter of his guilt and innocence is certainly a legal matter and needs to be assessed there. I think I would feel more comfortable if he was behind bars and not dead, because then some penalty has been paid. But I can't see why I would feel moral guilt listening to the music even privately. And yet I can understand why other people would certainly feel unhappy or dissatisfied or uncomfortable doing so. I just don't see the moral argument. I can't disincentivize the behavior through that choice.
Well, let me try and help you out. And I think it has to do with philosophical work inside the branch of philosophy called aesthetics. If you take seriously the affect element that comes with being a literate consumer of art, whether it be a film, a novel that we're going to talk about later with the novelist in the literature corner, or a piece of music, or you're listening to Beethoven's Fifth. I mean, there isn't just a casual relationship between you and the work of art. That work of art, in the best works of art, are supposed to be works that enable you to have an incredible range of interesting emotional and other kinds of experiences as you watch the film, as you listen to the music. It is supposed to have, some would argue, I'm not sure if I hold this view, but some of our colleagues in philosophy, that the great works of art even have moral qualities, and even on the instrumental reasoning, that some of the best writing, the best works, they have a particular place in the annals of history precisely because they show society a mirror of what we're about. Those works, the music, can be used in all sorts of interesting kind of ways. And this is also why, for example, to take another example that is part of the same WhatsApp group, it's so hard to continue enjoying without conscious reflecting whether you should be laughing the Huxtables.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are courses you can take at places like Morehouse College about the cultural value of this TV series in the 80s that helped black Americans to reimagine their own humanity in the context of white supremacy. But once you know what you know about Dr. Huxtable, it seems to me as if from an aesthetics point of view, morally, philosophically, that it is completely irresponsible to not think normatively about your laughter while you're re-watching reruns of the 1980s Cosby Show. Discuss, 50 marks.
Yeah, I think...
You're not moved at all?
I'm slightly moved, but I'm moved, I think, for the wrong reasons. I'm moved for sentimental reasons. I mean, I don't know how people can find a way to discriminate between listening to Wagner now and watching and laughing at jokes or even Seinfeld with Jerry Richardson, Richards or whatever his name was. All of these things are on a continuum. And so a pederast like Michael Jackson is particularly heinous, but a Nazi supporter is even more heinous. Of course, that's going to get me into trouble for saying, but I think on my moral calculus, it is more heinous. And we don't want to cancel that. So, and we can listen to it. And on your point about the aesthetic interpretation, why can't we listen to Michael Jackson and say, even though here's this vile pederast, look what they can do. Look what this person can do. Are there traces in his songs of things we should have detected earlier? You can still assess it from that point of view too.
Yeah, but we're going to run into difficulty very quickly if we wear our critical hats while we consume the works, right? And I would argue, but this is a separate conversation because it has to do with one's normative positioning inside aesthetics, that you shouldn't be a passive consumer. I mean, I've had debates on this show for many years about, say, for example, the works of Leon Schuster. Many black people will say, oh, please, Eusebius, get that person who's saying that the works are racist who off the show. Even as a black person, for us, it's just sheer escapism. But there's some really interesting debates there about how one ought to consume movies when you are in cinema. Now, we don't think about these things, otherwise we'll be dull and boring human beings. But there's some really deep and interesting questions there. Mm. If an artist is a predator, and I've secretly always been inspired by lyrics like Heal the World, Make It a Better Place, I'm not so sure I should discount what I now know about their biography the next time I hear the song. I mean, it seems to me very weird to try and compartmentalize my life between Eusebius listening to those lyrics as a sort of end in itself, as a product that lives on its own, and then on a separate occasion writing a 1,000-word piece for Daily Maverick about the artist's life.
Sure, but there could be two ends of that continuum. So you might no longer find it inspirational to listen to Make the World a Better Place or whatever, but that doesn't mean that you need to suddenly be do the cancel thing and never listen to him. So you can lose that idea of this character being an inspirational person, but that doesn't mean you need to be offended by listening to stuff which does not contain any problematic lyrics.
Let's hear what the public has to say. We'll take a couple of calls. Martin, good morning. How do you see it?
You're serious. Yeah, well, you know me, I'm an activist and I'm for the sexual survivors of sexual abuse. So if we look at it in this context only, you know, I've always had a feeling that Jackson was a bit of a pedophile. So I've never been a great fan of his music. But then again, you know, I was a great fan of Kevin Spacey, and now we discovered that too.
Mm.
But I think in terms of what your guest said, sorry, I didn't get the name.
Jacques Rousseau,
Jacques.
A good philosopher name.
Yes. Doc, what you said earlier is pretty good, is that by not listening, how am I going to benefit the victims? So I think, you know, everybody, you're not going to legislate somebody to not be a racist. I mean, that is something that they need to learn for themselves. So you're not going to legislate somebody to say, well, look, you have to care for child victims of sexual abuse. We can't change people's hearts, and we can't, by law, prescribe what they need to or don't need to listen to. So allow them the grace to listen to whatever they want to, despite their lack of conscience or whatever we feel they have. And then let the fact that they are listening, I mean, Michael Jackson's estate earned $400 million last year. I mean, that's more than some people that are still alive. So let the sheer fact that these people are still listening to his music benefit victims in some way by saying a percentage of whatever his estate earns needs to go to a victim's fund. And the same for Harvey Weinstein. If he's found guilty in a court of law, let a percentage of all these movies go towards a victim's fund. Same with Kevin Spacey, same with Jerry Savelle, same with the Rolf Harris. I mean, we can go on and that list is endless. You know, I mean, I get you.
That's a very interesting point, and it certainly, I can see Jacques shaking his head in the affirmative. We'll come back to that point. Thanks for that, Martin. I appreciate it, and I know that you are sincere around the rights of survivors. Nicholas, good morning. Welcome to the show. Hello, Nicholas.
Good morning, Eusebius and Jacques. I say we should keep listening to Michael Jackson's music.
Yeah.
Because I want to give you an example. Mm-hmm. Take, for instance, Ferdinand Porsche and Hitler. Together they developed the Beetle, which became one of the world's most famous cars, which we still drive. And say, for instance, the man or the woman who invented ARVs, say, for instance, they were a horrible racist and you hated them. You can't stop using ARVs. That's more or less the point I want to make.
Okay, that's a lovely set of analogies. Thanks for those, Nicholas. Tembi, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Tembi.
Oh, hi, Eusebius. It was quite an interesting thing to listen to you and Jacques. So I'm not at all conflicted about cancelling Michael Jackson or R. Kelly at all. In fact, anyone who hasn't, stop listening to him today. The reason I say this is that while we can make comparisons about a lot of people who have done bad things, often things that happen that are negative, that are outside what affects you, you won't react to. But as a black woman and as a black person and as a mother, those two people affect me. And by canceling that, it's not going to help the victims. It's not going to make a difference. But what it's signaling in my circle is that sort of behavior is unacceptable.
I totally get you.
The cancel culture, I know some people jump on the bandwagon and they don't know why. Even if you don't know why, that sort of behavior is unacceptable. And I think we have just normalized certain things.
Hmm.
That if someone does a certain thing, oh, yes, we should be okay with it. It's unacceptable. Cancel him immediately.
Okay.
And if Prince were to do it, Jack, I wish you could cancel him too.
Thanks for your call, Tembi. All three of those calls are very important. Let's work through them very quickly. We're running out of time. I wonder if we have to abandon our second topic. This may be a little bit more interesting than the bevy of race discussions we have in the country. Jacques, you and I will decide during the news headlines. What I like about Tembi's call is, one thing you and I do agree on is that virtue signaling is horrible. But if we listen generously to Tembi, she's making the point to my ears that because some people virtue signal for completely bad reasons, doesn't mean that signaling per se isn't sometimes important. And even if no woman or child will be safer if she stopped listening to MJ, she wants to signal solidarity. That's decent reasoning.
That's perfectly decent reasoning. And to make, or to expand on Tembi's point, I would challenge her to think about that in a bit more nuanced fashion. So she described her context and her kids and her environment and so forth. I would, of course, not play Michael Jackson at a party where I didn't know everybody and where we didn't all know our position on these things. I wouldn't play him at a public environment. I wouldn't play him with strangers. Mm-hmm. But in around my dinner table, if he comes up on a playlist with people who have discussed these things with all the time, all of us know about the evils of pederasty. All of us are in full agreement about those things. And there's no chance of me sending any kind of ambiguous signal by playing him. So signaling, I agree, is important, but signals operate in a context. A universal obligation to cancel and never play is too broad a signal. I want to say, yes, in uncertain contexts, cancel for sure. But there can be a safe space, to co-opt a term. There can be a safe space for playing Michael Jackson.
To signal a conversation we're going to have in future.
Yes.
Other side of the coin, Nicholas does make an important point. I don't know if you understood him. You were frowning a bit, or maybe you were thinking. His point for me is precisely, if you want to appreciate the instrumental value of certain innovations, what are you going to do when you find out nasty biographical facts about the inventors? ARVs are a good thing. I don't know who developed the best ARVs and who first developed them. If I discovered that it was, for argument's sake, Michael Jackson, I would not tell HIV-positive South Africans to cancel their treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
so that challenges me.
Yeah,
so it's interesting because obviously the broader issue, which is not new, is the separation between the artist and the art.
Yeah,
and I think the analogies play into that. What do you make of his example?
Well, Mr. There, even on the utilitarian grounds we were talking about earlier on, I think that you can more easily regard the ARVs as having a significant positive moral weight than you can the enjoyment you get from listening to Michael Jackson. So it's in a sense far easier to justify continuing and recommending that people continue taking the ARVs because of the obvious net positive compared to the bad. The reason why the Michael Jackson case is far more tricky is, why should just my enjoyment of a song offset this enormous moral burden? The ARVs are, the assessment is far easier, I think.
But there are grey areas that maybe serve Nicholas's point better. One grey area might be something like, and it's a real, it's not even just a theoretical grey area. This is real. If I work with young black working class kids who lack self-assuredness, they may be hugely inspired if over the weekend, while doing extramurals with them, we end the evening by me putting on The Cosby Show. And for the first time, they will see a show that shows off middle-class black people who are confident and who have professionals in it. Mm. And in that case, on Nicholas's logic, the instrumental benefit to get these young kids to reimagine their position in this society that have told them, you will only ever become a cashier at Checkers, is a very important benefit that you may get subtly through the consumption of some really interesting television series of old.
And dangerous teaching opportunities, right? Because you could use that intentionally and then reveal to them what the show is about, or what Theodore Huxtable, not Theodore, the,
yeah,
Dr. Huxtable is now known to have done. So that's, you true, can tell a very important lesson through that. Yeah, no, there can be enormously complicated grey areas, I agree. I think that we can't retrospectively litigate all these things, but once we come to awareness of them, we certainly need to assess our responses.
I don't entirely agree with you, Martin. I think Jacques agrees with you more, at least through his body language. I do agree that it'd be more useful to be able to say, for example, okay, is there some legal or non-legal activism mechanism through which we can divert some funds from the estate of a Michael Jackson to help, for example, children that are at risk? And that is a far more obvious instrumentally useful way of responding to allegations or proof of wrongdoing on the part of Michael Jackson. But depending on your ethical theory, and I really don't want to talk about that, Jacques and I may bore you when we talk ethical theory. We'll find a radio-friendly version of it in future. That works if you are committed to means and ways of reasoning about ethics. But if, like Tembi and like me as Eusebius, you don't only care about the material consequences, you also care about things that may not be about consequences, but my relationship, say, with art and an artist, regardless of the impact on society, then I'd want to do what Martin is doing, and I'd still want to sit with my own habits of continuing to listen.
Yeah, well, here's an important thing, even if we don't agree with Martin entirely, here's an important thing to take away. If you are somebody who wants to keep on listening to R. Kelly and Michael Jackson, what's stopping you from, in a personal sense, giving some contribution to a relevant charity, right? So while you're thinking these problems through in your head, there is something you can do. For every album you buy, every song you listen to, 5 Rand goes to, or 10 Rand goes to, Charity X.